Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we discuss my new personal build based on the latest ASUS Republic of Gamers hardware. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKay.
Last episode, we talked about a new build for the podcast, and I'm happy to say that we're on that machine now, so I hope it sounds great for you guys.
Well, yeah, hopefully. I mean, it is Windows 11. We've had a bit of a learning curve to make sure that the Focusrite Scarlett was actually hooked up correctly.
So new software, updated this, that, the other. So welcome aboard, guys. But that's not the only new build that's going on in the shop. And Dennis, it's been a while since you built a new personal machine.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
And you're probably long overdue. Now, for those that have been listening, you know that, of course, that isn't the same as the bench machine, which changes all the time, or the work machine, which is, you know, the work machine. But this is the machine that you play on, essentially.
Yeah. I took the overclocker mentality. So since I have so many builds changing, that's the one that I kind of build up. I can do whatever I want. I can tear it down, put it away.
Right.
I need something that's stable for me to write articles and also play games on. And it turns out that the machine I put together a long time ago has just worked. It's been awesome. It's done everything I needed it to do up until the past couple of years when I started to do a lot of 3D printing and 3D modeling.
And well, that's definitely a different angle than when the machine was built. Now, that machine is how old, would you say, roughly?
7 to 8 years.
Wow, that's quite a bit longer than I would have guessed. Because I know from a standpoint of the enthusiast, we talk about the life of PCs fairly regularly. And I think we're both in agreement. You should expect a machine, if you build a good machine, not an entry-level machine, to last a minimum of about 5 years. And if you go a little higher on the spectrum, it can last longer, which is kind of the case with this one.
Yeah. I mean, full disclosure, it's X99 EVGA for the win K edition.
Motherboard. Right.
You know, it's a board that I reviewed. It had a 5960X. The part that I was really proud of was that I had a 2090 Ti Kingpin Edition that was water-cooled that I got from EVGA.
Yeah, pretty terrific card, even still, really.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's super rare. That card I could probably still sell for what I bought it for. The system was completely water-cooled, so I like heat-killer CPU blocks. I was using an integrated pump res combo from XSPC. I also like the Black Ice line of radiators. So I had a Black Ice 280 radiator because I like 140 millimeter fans. It's just a dual fan, but I didn't need that much cooling at that time. You've seen the radiator. It's on the bench.
Oh, yeah.
It's thick. It's about an inch and a half thick.
Well, it's definitely a beast, and maybe some would consider it overkill for a machine that doesn't really do as much overclocking as it used to, and it's initial heyday.
Well, and this machine was never overclocked. I mean, well, it was overclocked when it was on the bench the first time, but when it rolled into being my main machine, it was never overclocked again. You know, I wanted it stable, and that was the whole point of that build.
So this was time. I think I agree with you there, and I know that you were excited about the opportunity to build a new machine. So I thought maybe we should talk about it because you have a unique perspective because we have a shop full of hardware. And really, you've spent a lot of time, especially CES, that type of thing, looking at the upcoming hardware. You like a higher-end PC that lasts a little longer. I tend to be sort of mainstream, middle-of-the-road gaming overclock machine.
Yep.
And I replace my machines usually a little bit more often because of it, but I spend less money.
Right.
So two different trains of thought.
Yeah, I like to go a little extreme sometimes.
So this, I think we can both agree, is maybe if not a dream PC, you know, you had the opportunity to pick and choose all of your pieces' parts. What does the Hardware Asylum guy do when he can pick whatever machines he wants?
Well, truth be told, I made a lot of my purchase decisions off of something that I just wanted.
Well, that's fair. We all do that.
Right. And I wanted to have a 4090, you know, RTX 4090, 24 gigabytes of RAM. I wanted the overclock edition.
Well, yeah.
And the one that kept jumping out at me as the card that I should just buy was the ASUS Strix.
I know there are a lot of, well, unicorns, as we call them, video cards out there from a lot of manufacturers. But the Strix, I don't know if I feel like this is like in that level as a Kingpin edition. Would you agree?
I would agree. This is no Kingpin edition card. It's no unicorn card. It is what I would call a mainstream, high-end, factory overclocked graphics card. The thing that makes it special is the fact that it's Strix and it's got a massive heatsink. It was in mass production and it's highly desired.
Right. Well, all 4090s, right? Because you almost have to win the lottery to get a 5090, but the 4090s weren't much better.
Correct. Now, you could get a lower end 4090 and spend less money. I went after the Strix one partially because, you know, the quality of Asus graphics cards has been really good lately. And I've already used one of these cards before and I saw the massive VRM that's on it. It was one of those overbuilt factory cards. And I like the ones that are custom.
Right.
Because so many manufacturers go and take like the reference design and then just slap on a new cooler. Well, Asus in this case was taking the EVGA route where they customized the board. So for the Strix that was overclocked, it was completely custom. And that was something that I really wanted.
Okay, so talk to me about the overclock on this. I have not looked at the card, but this is a factory overclocked. So it's a boost or a constant?
It is a boost. So basically with the NVIDIA boost, it gives you a reference clock. And then if you have proper cooling, it will ramp up to a certain speed. And a lot of times, it just runs that speed all the time. Now, if it gets saturated, then it starts to throttle down. Now, with the Asus Strix, you have two modes. You have a gaming mode and an OC mode, and those are selectable with a switch on the top.
Oh, nice.
Now, this is going to be a main build, so I'm not really going to be flipping that switch very often.
If ever, right?
If ever. But when it was on the bench, I was kind of messing around with it. And for the most part, the difference between the two is 30 megahertz.
Yeah, well, that's not much.
Not much. So you might as well put it in the gaming mode and just kind of leave it. Now, it's already clocked slightly higher than a factory 4090, and I don't have that spec right in front of me. But again, that wasn't necessarily very important for what I wanted to put together. I really wanted the 4090 partially because, you know, I have been jealous of the widescreen monitors.
All right.
So I've been eyeing a 49-inch, it's not the OLED, but it's the micro LED curved panel.
Oh, so sexy. Yeah. And 49 inches tends to be the new sweet spot for these super wides. I mean, I've seen them all the way up to 59. We've talked about that before.
Yeah. Well, and the 57 that I found was a 4K, basically three 4K panels or two 4K panels put together. This one's going to be the 1440p, which is not 4K. Not the best way to put a 4090 right. to use, but it would better replicate the desktop that I'm accustomed to that still gives me the resolution that I really need to have.
Well, and you got plenty of power there. Mm-hmm. So choosing from the ROG Strix line probably means then that you wanted to go with the Asus ROG or Aris, right, infrastructure.
Well, yes and no. Now, here's the kicker. And this is the part of the buying decision that gets a little bit crazy, right? So the 4090 Strix, highly sought after. And the price would fluctuate between $2,000 and $3,500.
That's a big swing.
And it depends on what was happening in the market. So for instance, when there was an embargo on cards going to China, the prices spiked because everybody was buying them and then just kind of getting on a plane and going to China and sell them.
There you go. Make some money.
And then toward the end, you know, around Christmas time when I purchased this card, stocks were drying up because NVIDIA was getting ready to roll out the 50 series.
Yeah.
So the price was spiking at this point. And I still wanted to have this card. And it turns out that Newegg came to the rescue.
Oh, nice. Go Newegg.
Now, Newegg was selling Asus bundles that seemed really attractive. Now, the thing with a bundle is that you have to buy everything in the bundle and you can't just send part of the bundle back. So when you buy the bundle, you are stuck with the bundle. Now, luckily, I had done a bit of research beforehand and I was able to kind of narrow that down a little bit. And really, that decision came down to the motherboard.
Oh, okay. So let's talk motherboard.
Yeah. Now, as you know, I am a stickler for motherboards. I love, for instance, the MSI Godlike. I love that board. It was the one that introduced RGB to the world. But it was also special in that it was designed for overclocking and also multiple graphics. But that was the thing back in the day.
All those things make me think more money, though.
Yeah. And that is also another factor that plays into this. So I was looking at it. It's like, well, if I'm going to spending, in this case, for the bundle, the card was $2,000.
Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah. If I was going to be spending that kind of money, I'm like, well, let's treat myself, right?
Well, yeah, and extend the life of the machine a little bit.
Yeah, so it really came down to a decision between the ASUS Apex, and this is going to be in the Z890 line, because I might as well go with the latest and greatest Intel processor.
Yeah.
We can talk about that a little bit later. And so it came down between the ASUS Apex, and the Apex is it's an overclocker stream. It's one of those systems that only has two DIMMs on board, so you can get massive memory overclocks out of it. It has all of the controls for liquid nitrogen overclocking. It has, the switches for slow mode and being able to like halt the system, stuff like that. And it also comes with the DIMM2 slot. Now, do you remember what the DIMM2 slot is?
No.
Okay, so the DIMM2 slot on the ASUS motherboards is a way that you can put two NVMe drives into this little cartridge, if you will.
Oh, that's right. Right.
That looks like a memory stick. And then you just kind of slap that in. They call that the DIMM2 slot. It's right next to where the memory is. I think it's cool, but I've never used it because it's like, well, I don't have two drives to put in there. I'm not like a storage nerd.
Well, and drives are getting cheaper and cheaper. So the ability to buy one larger drive is a lot easier than it used to be on the M.2s.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So the other board was the Extreme.
Ooh.
The Z890 Extreme. And I guess you can kind of guess which one I picked.
Ooh, no. I'm looking, of course, at the machine in the distance here, and I see, yeah, it's a Maximus Extreme.
Yeah, it's Maximus Extreme. Now, I have reviewed several Maximus Extreme boards in the past. I've also reviewed the Apex boards in the past. The thing I like about the Maximus Extreme is that it takes everything in the product line and then bundles it together into one massive board.
So it's kind of like checking every box when you buy a car.
Yeah.
I get it. And it's a gorgeous board. I particularly am fond of the screen that they put on that thing. It is sexy.
Oh, yeah. This is a full LED screen. Unlike when we talked about the AM5 board that I reviewed from ASUS, it had this kind of weird LED multi-layered effect that made it look like it was a screen, but it was just kind of colored lighting.
Kind of a hologram effect, if you will.
Well, this is definitely an LED, and you can put graphics on there and video, or you could have it just display system stats. It's pretty cool. The one thing that annoys me a little bit is that there's not very many expansion slots. I would kind of expect more expansion slots on a high-end motherboard, but we basically have a 4X slot, and then we have two 16X slots for graphics. It does come with a much larger heatsink for the M.2, so it'll support those PCI Express Gen 5 drives that some of them get actually pretty hot when they're just kind of sitting there, which is pretty crazy. This does have four memory DIMMs. And the one thing that really impressed me with the board that I really found out later when I was kind of doing my deep dive is all of these buttons at the bottom. You see those buttons?
Oh, I didn't realize those were all buttons.
Each one of those is kind of like an overclocking component.
Oh.
So it has like a slow mode switch.
Nice.
In the overclocking days, you would flip this slow mode switch and it would allow you to run at the lowest clock speed and be able to pull the temperature down. A lot of these buttons here are just ones that they were always rumored to be on ASUS ROG boards, but I never saw them because I didn't happen to have that one unicorn that just had everything on it, which was kind of weird and amazing. And now I have one, and guess what? I'm not going to really use any of it.
I'm curious then, why choose the Maximus over the Apex board?
Oh, color.
It was the design, huh?
Yeah, it literally was the color, because the Apex in the Z890 was a white titanium board. So it had a white PCB, it had titanium heat sinks on it, titanium looking heat sinks, white plastic covers. The Extreme was black.
Oh, okay.
And it also had the LED screen. I like the LED screen. And I remember how I was saying, well, I'm going to kind of treat yourself.
Right.
Well, it was also the more expensive option.
Well, it should have longer legs, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. And it was available in that bundle. So for the price that I would normally have to pay for a gouged version of a 4090, I was able to get a 4090, this Extreme motherboard, a 1200 watt power supply, a case, and an AIO cooler.
Oh, that's not too bad. And so I'm guessing with the bundle, some of those things end up being essentially free.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I basically saw it as I bought the graphics card and got four other items for free. Because again, if I was just to buy the card in the wild and then build a system around it using parts out of the lab, I would be spending the same amount of money.
Ooh, smart shopping. All right, let's flesh out the build a little bit here. So we talked about the M.2 drive slot. So what'd you go with?
I went with the Patriot Viper V4300. And this is a drive that I reviewed quite a while ago. And it's really just a Gen 4x4, but it's the fastest 4x4 drive I had tested at that point. It had really good performance. And in some of the benchmarks I've done, there's really no benefit for going to Gen 5 unless you really want to be on the bleeding edge of transfer, you know, for playing games and just running everyday apps. The 4x4 drive on a good motherboard is just as good.
Interesting, because I've been considering the Viper in the light edition of the 4300 for my next build.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is, of course, a slightly slower version, but doesn't require generally heat sink. So it just goes to show that you can scale that down a little bit and get most of that performance for maybe a little less money.
Yeah, well, and the controllers have really matured a lot, especially in the 4x4, you know, the Gen 4 edition, to the point where you don't need the heat sink. But every motherboard out there that is decent that you're going to buy will have one. Mine just happens to have a much larger heatsink that is designed for the Gen 5 drives. And the way that I put the system together, it would be really easy for me to go and just pull that drive out. Oh, that's actually one thing I should mention. On this particular motherboard and other ROG boards, the heatsink is basically you flip a lever and you just kind of pull a latch off, and then you can lift the entire heatsink off of the board itself. It just kind of locks into place. There's no screws, completely toolless.
Very nice.
And then once you get that piece off, you just slide a little plastic switch away, and then that will allow you to remove the drive. So it makes it super easy to go and just swap in drives if you are into that kind of thing.
Well, and if you get a faster one down the line, you can swap it out and maybe move the other drive or drives onto that excess card slot.
Oh, yeah. I can put it in the DIMM.2, or there are two slots between the expansion slots that you can put M.2 drives in there.
Yeah. So lots of options down the road for expanding and speeding that up. Obviously, we've got to talk RAM.
Oh, yeah. RAM. So the RAM is actually still in limbo.
Oh, no.
So I've ordered some memory. So I'm going to do a total of 4 sticks. And it's going to be a total of 96 gigabytes. So they're going to be
the
48 gig additions.
Look at you. 96 is the new 16, apparently.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, for what I've been doing, I need to have a bit more memory. And it will just make the system faster. I mean, that's something that I proved in a lot of benchmarks, whereas like if you go from 16 to 32, it's basically doubling the speed because you don't have to allow Windows to manage as much memory and cache it on and off the drive and stuff like that.
So let's talk about this from a recommend standpoint. If you were building a machine today, obviously you went a little crazy with 96, but that's future-proofing a bit too. And, and you know, you do AI and some things that most of us don't do.
Right.
So what would you say is what you would target now for a good gaming or high-performance machine?
Really, 32 gigabytes is still probably the gold standard for Windows 11 on a basic gaming machine. If you can go up to 64, you will basically be future-proofing and just increasing performance.
Excellent. Good to know. Good to know. Okay, so we've covered, I think, almost everything that's plugged into that motherboard except for the obvious, right? There's got to be a processor involved.
Right. Me picking up the Z890 is a bit of a controversy in the enthusiast world.
Well, right now, yeah, because There's a lot of pressure for AMD right now because the AMD X3D processors are really rocking, especially bang for your buck.
Yeah, and they also have a much more mature PCI Express Gen 5 ecosystem, allowing more lanes and faster transfers and stuff like that.
Well, and Intel's coming off kind of a bit of controversy, right, of their 14 and 15 generation having problems that may or may not exist depending on whether or not you have the right motherboard processor combo. And we won't go into that, but there's been a lot of people that have said maybe to skip a generation of Intel.
Well, and unfortunately, this is the generation that I picked. So it has a brand new socket. So it's the LGA 1850 or something like that.
Right.
And this is also the first processor that they released that's not an I. So instead, the naming changed to the Intel Core Ultra. And the Ultra processors have MPUs built in for basically Copilot-style AI processing. And they changed the way that the efficiency and performance cores are. And that is probably the biggest controversy there because the previous generation was technically faster.
Wow, okay. So they're marketing this, I see, as an Ultra 7 processor, which leads me to believe that that must mean that there's an Ultra 9.
Yes, there will be an Ultra 9. So we have, for instance, the Core Ultra 7. This is the one I have up on the screen right now. It is the 265K. And if we go over here, we have the Ultra 9, which is the 285K. Now, there's not much difference between that number. And while one's an Ultra 7 and one's an Ultra 9, these processors are almost identical. The big difference here is the Ultra 7 is a 5.5 gigahertz processor with a 30 meg cache. And if we look down here, we have a total of 20 cores, 8 performance cores, and 12 efficiency cores. And no hyperthreading.
Oh, I didn't catch that either. That's a big change.
Yeah, so we have a total of 20 threads. Now, if we flip over to the Ultra 9, it is a 5.7 gigahertz processor with a 36 megabyte cache, which that's nothing to sneeze at because extra cache with a lot of memory equals a lot more power, a lot more speed. But we only have a total of 24 cores, 8 performance cores, and 16 efficiency cores with a total of 24 threads. Do you see the difference here?
Yeah, not as much as I would have guessed.
Yeah, only 8 performance cores. So a lot of the enthusiasts out there were basically saying, well, we're back to an 8-core processor.
Yeah, so you might as well get the cheaper one.
Yeah.
Where you can overclock the same 8 cores either way.
Exactly. And in my test, the overclocking for the Ultra 7 is, it should be able to go the 5.7 gigahertz, but the way that the processor is set up in the BIOS, it makes it really difficult to really adjust anything on it. So, and this is one of those situations where you buy your performance. So if you want to have that extra speed, you need to buy the Ultra 9, but it's 300 megahertz. So, you know, you might as well go cheap.
So little, especially if you can get some overclocking headroom out of it.
Yeah, and you can, but it's all on the memory side. That's really where the big performance boosts are.
So I think we've got the main pieces out, but just for completeness, I guess we should run through the rest of your build. So you mentioned power supply already, but I want to come back to it.
Okay.
Did you use the bundle power supply or did you pick a different one?
I went with the bundled power supply. Partially, it's 1,200 watts. It has the approved power connector for the graphics card. So, you know, put it all together and make it work.
So this is a ASUS ROG product, so it's matching. It has pretty RGB, I noticed.
Yeah, it has its own little plug.
So let's talk power supply very briefly. We have talked about the sweet spot for power supplies has been creeping up. I think when we last talked about it, we recommended about an 850.
An 850, yeah.
Maybe it was an 800, but somewhere in that zone. But now you're at 1,200. Where do you sit today on power supply level recommends?
It's at the same. It will really depend on the graphics card that you are running. So for a 4090, you want to be on the upper end of the 850. So 1,000 watt, 1,200 watt is probably where you want to be just because during peak loads, it's going to be drawing a lot of power. And if you are right on the cusp, it's going to put a lot of extra heat into the power supply. The fan's going to spin up a lot more. It'll be less efficient. So if you go 1,200 watts, like what I did, it should never really sweat, quote unquote. You know, so at that point, it's always going to remain efficient. It should also remain quiet.
And you've got some future proofing. And I'm assuming, of course, that you would still recommend at least a gold rated power supply.
Yes. And that's strangely enough, that's what this is. It's a 80 plus gold. I kind of would have expected a platinum at 1200 watts. I mean, I have 1200 watt power supplies that are platinum, but it'll be fine.
So I can see this machine and the folks at home can't. So we'll have to post a picture.
Yeah, but check the show notes.
I know that you went with a custom cooling solution, and as we have done with the last couple of builds we've done for both you and my machines, you did hardline piping.
Yes, I love hardline. I never thought I would like it as much as I do, but it's a bit therapeutic. All right, so for CPU block, I went with a Heatkiller 4. Again, I like the Heatkiller line. And this is one that I purchased quite a while ago so that I could do an LGA 1700 review. Turns out that the mounting points for the LGA 1800 is the same as the 1700, so it can be a direct fit on top of there. So I have the water block to put in there, which is great. I also got the reinforced backplate. It reduces the flex in the socket, so you get a much flatter response when you add your heatsink. Better cooling, basically.
Yeah, that sounds like money well spent there. Now, you did talk about Heatkiller also from a couple other parts, but I don't see branding on your radiators.
So for the radiator, like I said before, I am a fan of the Black Ice line.
Okay, so that's a Black Ice then?
Yeah, it's a Black Ice. It's the same thickness as my 280, but now I went with 420. So basically, it's the triple 140 millimeter. And, you know, I needed that partially to cool the 4090. So I needed to have a little bit more space.
So for the rest of the cooling, the fans in there are some pretty RGBs. Now, I'm guessing those are not the ones that came with the case because they look pretty nice. Well, except for maybe the exhaust fan. So what'd you use?
Well, I went with the Thermaltake Ring Duo 140 millimeter. I was running the original rings, the RGB rings before, and I really like them. They were simple. They come with a Thermaltake controller. This runs in the background and you get a nice lighting effect off of that. With the Ring Duo, now it adds more lights. So you have lights in the center, you have a translucent fan hub, so the fans themselves will light up. And then you have a couple of rings around the outside that, it just adds more lighting effects. And chances are I'm going to just have them in a, you know, one pattern and that will be it. But the idea is that since I have three intake fans, the lights there will just be on the outside of the radiator because I'm pushing into the case. And the top are exhausting out the top.
I see, though, that you don't have lights on your...
rear fan?
On your rear fan. And ironically, although we've already talked about it, there's no lights on your CPU cooler.
No, there's not. And that is, a nice thing about the Heatkiller brand is that they don't need to have the fancy lights to be cool. Which is, I don't know.
Be cool. That's nice.
It's the one thing that I like about that particular block. Now, of course, going back to the other Heatkiller block that I purchased, and this is for the 4090, I've gotten a lot of people that really like that heatsink block. And I think it's because it's different from the EK that you normally see, where the whole front is just plexiglass and you can see all the channels inside of it. With the Heatkiller, you have a window that allows you to see the channels, and the rest of it is just this chrome around the outside, which is really kind of neat. And the ports are on the back side, so you don't actually see the inlet and outlet ports.
So, and that leads me to the final item, which we've already talked about a little bit off and on.
Yep.
And that is your case decision. I know you did some custom work on it, but what case did you choose?
Actually, it's the View 71. This is a chassis that I reviewed several years ago before this build got put together. It's what that build was in, so I'm using the exact same case. Now, I did have to do a few mods, though, because the Maximus Extreme motherboard is extreme. It's much longer than the case is designed for, so I needed to cut some other holes to do cable access. So I got to break out the Dremel, which was awesome, kind of open up some holes in there. And then I was able to finagle the XSPC pump res that I had in the previous build, put that back in there. It just kind of got itself positioned perfectly to cover up the mod I made so you don't even see the cables.
Now, this case has a lot of glass, though, right?
Oh, yeah. It's got four panels of really thick tempered glass. I mean, you put the glass on there, you do not necessarily want to pick it up because it's pretty heavy.
Well, and it's a heavy case even without the glass out, but it's going to show every element of your build. So, of course, cable management and your design choices really stand out, which is, I think, the most important part of a build, especially if you're planning on showing it with glass.
Well, and this particular case does not have a basement panel, so the cables are just kind of, honestly, they're just bundled right next to the power supply because some of them could go into the back, but really they just needed to go directly up. Like the cable that goes to the 4090, it needs to go from the power supply up to the video card. So it's like, well, what do I do with the rest? So I kind of made a nice little coil. It's not much you could do, but they're black. They're at the bottom.
There's no light down there too. So they do kind of disappear behind the glass.
Yeah.
It's old school.
It's old school. It's awesome. And you know, it's not like it's going to be a show build. I'm not going to take it to a LAN party because the thing is really, really heavy.
Well, time will tell, right? Now, I think that kind of winds us up today, but we'll get, of course, a build list in the show notes and some links to the products that we've purchased or reviewed so that you can take a look at this build for yourself. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it again sometime soon.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or subscribe to us on YouTube. This has been an Engineering Production, copyright 2025. Thanks for listening.